Today on Inside Utah Politics, Utah's nuclear ambitions are taking shape. Plans for new uranium processing in the Wasatch Front, sparking questions of what's next for the state and the surrounding community. Plus, artificial intelligence threatening support for the big, beautiful bill. Why one Utah lawmaker says Washington needs to back off.
They're dumb flags, and it was a dumb bill.
And the governor not mincing words on the pride flag issue. Hear his hot takes on flags, protests, and whether we'll have a special election in Utah this year.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrens.
Well, thanks for joining us. I am Lindsay Ehrens. Let's go inside Utah politics. We begin our program with our eyes on Utah's energy future. The state considering plans for a new uranium processing facility to fuel the governor's plans to build new nuclear energy. Our Jordan Tracy sat down with the executive director of the Utah Department of Natural Resources to learn what it means for our state.
All right, we're joined by Joel Ferry, the director of the Department of Natural Resources, and talking about this prospective project at Camp Williams. Kind of tell us where we are in the process. It sounded like we're talking about the potential of maybe having this. Kind of walk us through it.
So where we are, that's exactly right. It's the first phase as we've explored, you know, looking at how can we develop energy projects in the state of Utah. So we have this really incredible opportunity where we have at Camp Williams the opportunity to develop out a site that's going to do processing of uranium. Now, uranium's critical in the energy production for the United States. Nuclear plants need that uranium. And so what this is that middle layer. So it's not going to be final fuel production, but it's a processing that we need that's critical. There's only one other place in the country that does this. And so Utah is going to be in the center of this, especially for new advanced energy production.
Now, obviously the governor has Operation Gigawatt.
Yes.
Trying to make Utah one of the leaders to kind of take over. As you said, only one other in the country. This is a step in that direction.
It is. This is part of a very aggressive strategy. We know energy demand is just growing like crazy. And we don't have enough energy to meet all the needs. We're electrifying. We're using AI. We're doing all of these things. I mean, we all have cell phones that require a ton of just data backup, right, to do and live our lives. It's added significantly to our quality of life. Now it's our turn to go, and we need to make the energy to support the lifestyles that we all want to live. Nuclear energy is clean, it's reliable, and it's going to be our future. And so ultimately, this fits directly within Governor Cox's Operation Gigawatt, which is really exciting. It's very ambitious. This is the kind of work that we're doing.
Now, the governor touched on this on his press conference this month, that when people think about a nuclear power plant, they automatically think Simpsons. They think Lake Springfield. they think the fish with the seven eyes.
I grew up with Simpsons. I know exactly what you mean.
You know, that's what they're thinking. And, of course, Camp Williams is in a really secluded place. It's in a neighborhood there in Lehigh in the Bluffdale region. So for folks who might say, oh, nuclear in my neighborhood, I don't know if I want that, what do you say to them?
So, again, this is that middle layer. So we're not talking about fuel and fuel production. We're talking about the process, okay? So we're taking a gas, it's coming in and going out in the same form, just a little more enriched. And so it is very safe. This is not the Simpsons, this is not the 1970s, 60s, 70s, 80s, this is 2020s. And so this is a very safe process. Highly regulated, and this ultimately is going to go through a process where the public will have opportunities to comment. So in right now where we are, we're just talking about signing some land leases. The National Guard will sign some land leases to continue to move forward with this energy opportunity. And so it will be years before we start to see any sort of development occurring there, and ultimately a processing, a nuclear energy processing site that will, quite frankly, it's going to benefit that community. It's in a great location. You've got access to great people, universities, and because it is so safe, I don't have any concerns, and we're going to continue to promote the message of what this means for the people in those communities and how it is safe and how they can be comfortable with something like this occurring there.
And finally, I want to touch on something that Drew DeWalt said. He talked about how while this is the next step of some of the infrastructure, there's more infrastructure that has to be built. You mentioned universities. You meant, getting a workforce.
A workforce.
Yeah.
Because, not everybody that works in the nuclear energy industry is a nuclear, you know, engineer.
Yeah.
You need plumbers, you need welders, you need, you know, all the different trades to build these things and to manage them. You're going to see significant benefit. I mean, these are high paying jobs, but they're also jobs that are going to be very sustainable long term. Once this gets built, this is going to be changing the focus and the scope of how Utah is seen in the world. People are going to look to Utah as an example of how things can be done in today's world safely, effectively, with all the regulations, going through all the processes, and getting it done to benefit Americans using American workers, American technology, and American product. The product that's going to go there is going to be milled in Utah. It's going to be mined in the Four Corners area in Utah. So this is coming full circle, Utah doing great things for the United States of America.
All right, Joel Ferry, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you. Great to be here.
Back to you, Lindsay.
And our Jordan Tracy there with the director of Utah's Department of Natural Resources. Thank you so much. We're still ahead here on Inside Utah Politics. Utah lawmakers are pushing back on Washington. Why Representative Doug Feofia, state representative here, says the Big Beautiful Bill's AI provisions go too far. He joins us next.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrens.
Welcome back. Artificial intelligence regulations seem to be the latest snag for President Trump's big, beautiful bill. Lawmakers in both Congress and the Utah State Legislature are voicing their disapproval for a provision in that bill that would stop states from regulating artificial intelligence for the next 10 years. Now, this week, dozens of Utah lawmakers signed on to an open letter to our senators saying Utah does AI regulation right. And for his part, Governor Cox seems to agree.
What we're focused on is the very practical impact of AI and how it is then being used in commercial applications that impact the residents of Utah. So this is just normal consumer protection. AI companies actually support what we're doing because they recognize that this is the right way to do AI regulation.
Well, joining me today, the author of that joint letter, State Representative Doug Feofia. Representative, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lindsay.
Okay, so you authored some of this legislation here in Utah that we have around AI. Can you just walk me through some of the specifics of Utah's laws around AI?
Sure. So Utah was the first state to implement a Utah AI Policy Office, which is huge. We also implemented an AI laboratory, innovation laboratory. And then we've started to come up with policies that protect consumers. Something like, as AI is approached by businesses to consumers, they have to state that they're using AI. And so simple things that are just looking out for Utahns and consumers, making sure that we know when AI is being used, is what we've done with Utah. But that's been leading the nation. We haven't seen a lot of action, but you start seeing a lot of states following Utah's lead, and it's great that we've been leading from the front.
You've gotten a lot of notoriety this week, at least locally, for this letter. Anytime Republicans in this state say we don't like something Republicans in Congress are doing, it's noteworthy, right? But talk to me about your motivation for trying to inform our senators that, hey, this could really hurt Utah if it stays in this bill.
Yeah, let me first say that the one big, beautiful bill, there's a lot in there that I love and that I support. A lot of the conservative reform is why we voted in President Trump. The tax cuts, the removal of red tape. There's a lot that we support, but hidden in this bill is this 10-year moratorium on AI, and it, one, infringes on state rights. And as a legislature, that scares us because that is infringing on our ability to react to something that is moving at such a fast pace. And 10 years in technology is a lifetime. And when you take away states' rights' ability to adapt and shift with something as fast as AI is moving, at the end of the day, who ends up getting hurt is consumers, and that's a non-starter for us.
But is there an argument to be made for a federal approach to regulating AI? If everyone has it the same way, shouldn't we have some sort of oversight on the industry in general?
Absolutely. I think in an ideal world, the way that this works out is we have a partnership between the federal government and states, right? States are laboratories of innovation for policy, and we can be nimble and adapt as needed. But the federal government should create guidelines and a framework similar to what Utah has created. And so instead of waiting for Congress to act, which we know sometimes takes a long time, we can't cut off the arms of state legislatures to be nimble and react as needed. And so as we wait, I think there's a need for us to have our state rights to make sure that we are protecting consumers.
Why do you think this moratorium got put in here in the first place? Because like you were saying, this is a 10-year pause. This isn't just like, you know, don't do anything this year. I mean, it's a long time for something to be, hey, you can't touch this industry at all whatsoever. Why do you think it was in there?
Yeah, I mean, what I've heard from our partners in the federal government is that there is a serious global arms race when it comes to AI with China and other countries. And I respect that, and I think that that's important. At the same time, just because we want to move fast doesn't mean we have to do so without a seatbelt. I think we can add in safe guardrails, and we can still allow states to do their job without completely banning it.
And will you elaborate on that China piece a little bit? How does banning regulations on AI here help us versus China?
So there's two pieces, right? So there's the developer is what's being created. I think that's where the AI race is really, right? And I don't think as a state we're looking to ban what AI is actually creating. We're not looking at banning or regulating the ChatGPTs, the Google Geminis, the Anthropics of the world, but more so on the deployer side. As companies take in AI and they're deploying it to users in Utah, we want to say, actually, you're infringing on this data. Actually, this is a privacy issue. Actually, you can't use that. And what we've done with health chatbots mm-hmm. is what I think is kind of an example of this is, yes, AI is being used in the health industry and doctors are able to see and serve more Utahns. At the same time, if a chatbot is giving health advice, that can be scary if you're taking it as your doctor and not double checking and saying, hey doctor, this told me that I should be doing X, Y, and Z and take this medication. And so we added in one provision to say, hey, if you're giving health advice, you need to make sure that you're saying that it's AI. And so there's a difference of approach of the developers versus the deployers. And I think what we're fighting for is we have to have a say in definitely the deployers and allow the federal government to set guidelines on the developers.
And you see that piece as consumer protection.
Absolutely.
When you're protecting those deployers, right, who are protecting consumers here in Utah. Okay, interesting. So what is the likelihood this thing gets pulled out of the big, beautiful bill? We talk about this the Senate rule. It's called the Byrd rule, which is a really weedy Senate rule, basically, that governs them, that says they can't have non-spending things in a spending bill. Those are my words, not theirs. Non-spending things, right? But regulations that don't deal with spending. So the parliamentarian has to come in here and basically approve this regulation and this provision in this bill. What is the likelihood you think that it comes out?
As I meet with our federal delegation, they seem to be confident that this is something that was stuck in the bill that doesn't have to do with money, right? And so we're hopeful that this comes out. We've also heard that this might end up in a separate bill, which I think is very fitting. That's where it should be. Should be in a completely separate bill, and we should give Congress enough time to debate it and come up with federal guidelines, but it shouldn't be a moratorium of 10 years. When we've seen moratoriums happen in the past, they haven't been 10 years. They've been short, targeted, in the case of emergency, and it's given time for regulators to come up with guidelines. And I think that's what we would like to see with this AI moratorium.
Where do you think Utah's policy goes next with AI? What else needs regulating in our state, at least while we have the ability to do that?
Yeah, I think that's a hard question to ask because nobody knows where this ride is taking us, right? AI is moving at such a fast pace. Even I worked at Google, even the things that are generally available to public is still a few years behind what is actually being created. And so we kind of have to act where we're passing the puck to where the skater is going to be. And I think
I love a Gretzky reference, so thank you.
Go Utah Hockey Club.
Yes, go Mammoths.
Go Mammoths. And so I think what we need to do as states is be able to keep our ear to the ground. We're working with the Chambers of Commerce. We're working with small tech business owners. We're working with academia. We're working with consumer groups to come up with a balanced approach of how do we continue to support innovation while also protecting consumers.
How concerned are you about AI and Utah's job growth?
I think it actually expedites that. I think AI will be used and expand industries. Some jobs will go to the wayside because AI will be taking over some of those jobs. But I think it's important, especially for our colleges, to embrace it and figure out what are the next jobs that are coming. But I think it'll only expand the economy as we embrace it and think forward as we're looking at AI.
I think you're the only person on the earth who's ever had that take on AI not taking jobs.
Well, I come from the tech industry,
yeah,
and I see that, yes, it will take over some jobs, but there's also skills-based and some interpersonal jobs that will never go away, right? Sales, I come from a sales world. Sales will never be taken away because a lot of it is relationship-based. And so there will be some administrative tasks that will be replaced by AI. But I think at the end of the day, it'll be more important to have personal relationships and build those interpersonal skills.
Well, let's hope that state lawmakers and TV anchors are still humans needed in this world in 10 years. Representative Doug Fiafio, we appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, coming up here on Inside Utah Politics, protests in Los Angeles sparking nationwide discourse, what the governor had to say in his monthly press conference. That's next. Well, Utah Governor Spencer Cox is considering calling a special election to put Utah's public sector union law on the ballot this year. Now, you might remember labor unions got enough signatures to challenge the state law that would ban them from collective bargaining. Now, per state law, referendums can only go on the ballot during statewide elections, and that would mean waiting until next year. But the governor can call a special election to do it this November. Now, he tells us all options are on the table.
We're having conversations with lots of people, having conversations with the legislature, having conversations with county clerks who have to oversee those elections, and just trying to see what's best. Is it best to get it on now and get it over with? Is that easier? Is it too much pressure?
Now, the governor has a deadline of June 21st to do this. Cox also took a moment to address protests and riots in Los Angeles this past week. State leaders there in California are suing the Trump administration over seizing control of their National Guard. Well, our governor shares some of their concerns. He said something needed to be done to keep the peace.
I do think it is legal for the president to do that, whether it's wise or not. When things get out of control, somebody has to stop it. And so I'm grateful that we have a president who's willing to act to help stop that.
Now, the governor went on to say he wants Utah to be the best place to protest and the worst place to riot, promising a quick law enforcement response if any demonstrations here escalate or vandalism or violence ensue. Now, finally here, the governor also made no secret of his feelings on Salt Lake City's new flags aimed at circumventing the state's ban on pride flags on government property.
It's ridiculous. I mean, I feel bad for the Japanese Americans. I feel bad for the Polynesian Americans. I mean, who are we leaving out here, Robert? I'm sure they feel great that they got around this dumb law. And they did it with dumb flags.
What
and
do you think
it's just
be done?
The whole thing's dumb.
Well, asked for his solution, the governor says he'd prefer to see everyone unite around the American flag. Well, those comments from the governor have sparked a lot of discussion, both online and off, including criticism from supporters and opponents of the bill. And it's something we discussed at length on our new streaming exclusive show. It's called IUPTV. Take a listen to what our panel had to say.
Right? Mm-hmm. Flags have always been political. That's why we have flags, from sports to countries to war, whatever it is, right? But the thing is about rainbow flags, and I've said this before in my state board meetings, I am gay, and rainbows are really not part of my brand. I'm not a big rainbow person. Mm-hmm. And so it's really always been like, they're fine, you know, there's a reason for them. And the reason for them, we wouldn't need rainbow flags or trans flags if people treated queer people with respect and didn't continuously make laws that were, pushing back against them, pushing them into, to lead to suicide and telling that they're wrong and awful and all these things, right? We have rainbow flags. We have pride flags because a teacher with a pride flag at their desk, which they're no longer allowed to do, tells a student, a queer student, that they are safe there. Mm-hmm. And that is why we have those flags. It's to show that your neighbor that has it, I'm in a safe space. And we wouldn't need those flags if people just treated queer people with respect, right?
Yeah, I want to stop you before you make your other points because I want to kind of linger on that point a little bit. The argument from the other side is that, to your point, political flags should not be coming from the government, right? The speech of the government should not be political, hence why they were banned.
Right. And to that I say, I just think that we wouldn't even be having this argument if we just accepted and loved the LGBTQ community. We wouldn't need to have safe, flags to show that they're going to be safe here or that they're supported. And so going back to, the government doing this, I just kind of think if we're making laws that municipalities are, going at them with this move to make their own flags. And if they're having to do that, that's when I again go back to, I think he's right. It's a dumb law. This is bad governing. We shouldn't be governing this way, where in turn these municipalities are having to respond in this way.
Right. Aaron, let me ask you this, though. The governor is getting criticism because he could have vetoed the dumb law, and he didn't. He didn't sign it. He just let it become law without his signature. So what does that say? What do you make of the criticisms of Governor Cox that he should have vetoed the law if he thought it was so dumb?
I mean, I think that I think it's likely that the legislature probably would have overridden the veto anyway and found a way to pass it regardless. And maybe Governor Cox knew that and just thought, you know, I mean, we've been here once before, right? We were here, 4 years ago with the transgender sports bill, which the governor did veto initially. And he vetoed it on a procedural foot and said, look, like, we have kids that this impacts. Let's, you know, the end result is not necessarily bad, but let's find the right way to get there. And I like that approach about Governor Cox. I think, you know, he's been beaten in battle by a lot of members of the Republican Party who don't agree with that approach. And I think we're seeing the effects of that in how he handled this bill. And again, you know, if he saw the writing on the wall and thought the legislature's going to do this anyway, then maybe he just went ahead with, you know, like,
yeah, there's a political calculation, and he's been open about that, you know, if they can just override it anyway, why am I going to spend my political capital?
Right.
Maybe they've threatened to, you know, get rid of all my other priorities if I sign this or if I veto this.
Right. It's retaliation. So, yeah. Like, everyone constantly, including Governor Cox, State Board of Education, municipalities, especially the city of Salt Lake, everyone lives in fear of retaliation. And I think that oftentimes we see that, you know, if I veto this bill or that bill, I'm not going to get my priorities. And that would be a really hard decision to make. Is this a dumb law? Yes. Should I veto it? Probably. But if I do that, I'm going to cause more trouble and not get my whatever.
Well, and Governor, I think, Cox's, too, you know, when you're in elected office, and Sarah, you know, I'm preaching to the choir here, but, you know, you do have to pick your battles, and you do have to decide what you're going to fight for in any given moment and what you're not going to fight for. And maybe Governor Cox looked at this and said, I'm not going to be able to stop this bill from passing, but there are other things that I can do to help the LGBTQ community, because I think that he has been pretty open about the fact that he wants to support members of the LGBTQ community in Utah, and that they should have a place here and should feel loved and welcomed here. And there are a lot of Republicans who feel that way. Mm-hmm. And so we're dealing with difficult issues and difficult questions brought up on both sides about this. And, you know, so, yeah, he's looking at this and saying, now it's just evolving into an issue where we're just sort of slapping each other on the face. And, okay, well, if you're going to pass a dumb law, then I'm going to, you know, we're going to go create flags and get around your dumb bill. And it just takes focus away from how could we really be supporting this community in a more meaningful way? Like, what are the things we could be doing instead of wasting time passing laws and resolutions that just don't actually really accomplish anything.
Well, there, that just a chunk of a longer conversation. Now, if you want to see the full episode on our News for Utah Plus streaming app, it's available now for download. Just go to your Apple TV, your Roku, or your Fire TV and search for News for Utah Plus. Well, Utah Senator Mike Lee has revealed his amendment to the Big Beautiful Bill that would help fund the federal government by selling off public land. Now, you might remember that Utah Representative Celeste Malloy proposed a similar provision that didn't make it into the version of the bill senators are now tweaking. Well, under Lee's plan, the BLM would be required to sell off between roughly 1.2 million and 1.8 million acres of land across the country to support affordable housing. Environmental groups like the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, though, opposing the plans, say the proposal threatens the state with unchecked development. Well, that's going to do it for today's Inside Utah Politics. Don't forget, if you have any local political stories you'd like to see, make sure to reach out. You can always email insideutahpolitics@abc4.com. I'm also on social media, so I'd love for you to follow along. X, Blue Sky, Threads, and Instagram, Lindsay on Air. Lindsay is just spelled with an A. You can also find our show online in podcast form. Just search for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz wherever you get your podcasts. Well, thanks for being with us today, everyone. We will see you next week.